Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon discussed the Champions League exits of Arsenal and Manchester City in the quarterfinals. Premier League dominance stopped short on the European stage this year, but what impact could it have on the title race? We react to the news that FA Cup replays are to be scrapped from the first round next season. How will that affect the smallest clubs? Meantime, Eni Aluko has claimed that men's football is not a safe place for women. We hear from you, the fans, and we talk boxing with Spencer Oliver with two undisputed fights on the horizon in Saudi. Usyk Fury on May the 18th and Beter Biev against Bivol on the 1st of June. This is Outspoken with White and Jordan. We heard from Arteta last night, we heard from Guardiola off the back of Arsenal and Manchester City being knocked out of the Champions League by Bayern Munich and Real Madrid respectively. In fact, let's hear from him. This was Arteta first.
Well, we haven't played in the competition for 7 years. We haven't been in this position for 14 years. There is a reason for it, you know, and we want to do everything fast forward, super quick in one season. And I thought we had the capacity and the quality to be in the semi-finals because the margins have been very small. But those margins, some that are coming from something else that that maybe we don't have yet, and we have to learn it. And when you look historically, all the clubs to get to certain stages, they took them 7, 8, some of them 10 years to do it. But today, that is not going to make us as feel better, that's for sure.
I would have preferred to win. First of all, congratulations to Real Madrid to reach the semi-finals. They defend so deep with incredible solidarity. We did everything. I don't have absolutely any regret about what we have done. So always we try as a managers and so create more and concede less in every single game because we believe that that helps to be close to win. And we did everything. So defensively, offensively, they make a good goal. So we play exceptional in all departments, in everything, and unfortunately we could not win, so that's where it is.
Can't really argue with anything that Guardiola or Arteta have said there, Simon.
Yeah.
I mean, Premier League dominance stopped short then on the European stage.
Mm.
But what impact might we see in the title race here? Derailment or a refocus of minds?
Probably neither, really. I think they've both already got very strong mindsets. I thought Arsenal looked a tad lacking in confidence in this game and a little bit of belief, but not much. And I don't expect it to fall away. I liked Arteta's conference afterwards. I don't think he should use examples of what he's done in the past to take to get somewhere as some blueprint to follow. If it's taken other people 10 years to achieve something, which is what he's kind of saying, other clubs 10 years, then our progress is good. I'm not sure that's the greatest of arguments because you're looking to emulate other things, not follow them. But I also think that it will do nothing for either one of these clubs in terms of derail their Premier League season. I don't think it will make a scintilla of difference to Man City. The margins in the game Man City lost that game are so small. They weren't really in control of either one of the ties, even though they were the better side in both. I thought they were the better side in Madrid, and I thought they were the better side last night. And somehow, they managed to concoct an outcome that didn't result in them getting past. And people will look at the Real Madrid lustre. I think Real Madrid sometimes are like the Gareth Southgate of domestic football. They've rubbed a four-leaf clover. They somehow get through games that they have no business getting through.
Simon, come on.
No,
they've made the Champions League semi-finals 12 times in 14 seasons.
And it is a miracle sometimes to watch how they've managed to achieve it. Because
the Champions League trophy belongs to that club.
I concede that the record book is undebatable, but when you watch the game sometimes you look at it and go, I don't really know. Man City must be scratching their head looking, I don't really know how he didn't manage to come out of that game. I think there's something like 25 corners, something like 70% possession, and Madrid managed to hang in there and get a result. And you have to give credit to it. I'm not diminishing it. I'm just saying it must be slightly perplexing. So when we say, oh, look at this so-called powerhouse of a Premier League getting chastened in Europe, I don't quite see it that way. I accept and concur with the view that it's a phenomenal competition for Real Madrid because they've dominated it in Europe. It's a knockout cup. They achieve something in a knockout cup. Whilst it's wonderful, it's a wonderful tournament to win, and Souness will tell us it's the pinnacle of a managerial career to win a European Cup, but it's 13 games, right? A domestic season.
Yeah, but it's a company you're keeping.
Granted, but notwithstanding it, it's
no matter how they did it, they saw off Manchester City last night.
And they did. They saw up.
They went ahead at the Etihad last night.
They did, and Manchester City went ahead three times against them in the Bernabeu, and each time Madrid got back with deflected goals and kept themselves in the game. And you have to give admiration for it because there's something about the stickability. I don't think I looked at Real Madrid going, look at that wonderful Real Madrid side. Look how fluid they are. Look how fluent they are. Look how they absolutely are so easy on the eye. They're a beautiful football team to watch. I thought to myself, you know, City are a far better football side, but by a series of absolute, you know, I suppose fortitude from Madrid, they get through. Arsenal's a different dynamic. Arsenal, like I said yesterday, is a work in progress. And I said, you know, a year ago, a little bit less than a year ago, you know, not so much prophetically, but with a degree of thought process, that they're going to spend £200 million to possibly stand still. And if they finish second in the league again this year, which is likely, then they will have metaphorically stood still.
I mean, where are you at with the idea that great progress or great pretenders?
On Arsenal.
Arteta's Arsenal,
well,
specifically.
I don't think they're pretenders. I don't think that's...
Yeah, but are people wrong to dismiss the idea of any tangible improvement from last season?
Last season they weren't in the Champions League, so they've had to contend with the Champions League as well as the domestic season. So you can't argue with the fact that they've been more varied, and I think they've been a better side than they were last year. I think if this Arsenal side were 5 or 6 points clear, or however many points they were clear going into March of this season, I don't think they would have fallen away like they did last year in games. Albeit, yes, I know you can make the argument Aston Villa did a number on them. Absolutely, I understand that. But it is the first defeat they've suffered in this calendar year. So you have to look at Arsenal in the whole, not in the individual games.
So you're saying great progress?
I think it's progress. I don't think it's great progress. I think they've kind of stood still, but they've stabilised. They could have gone backwards. They could have gone backwards in the achievements last year. Some might argue that they overachieved, given where they were with the squad that they had. And what they've done is they spent £200 million to stabilise. People will always say, stability, build a base. From that base, build excellence. Well, Arsenal have consolidated. Mm. What they've done is they've gone into Europe at a decent tilt at it. They're in the Premier League. They're second in the table. They can go top of the table if they beat Wolves on Saturday. They're going to be right in it until the very last knockings. So if they finish second again to Manchester City on 84 points, similar to last year, and have had a successful campaign in the Champions League, albeit disappointing to go out against Bayern Munich, then I think you could turn around and say that Arsenal's report is a B+.
Mm. On Manchester City, I could not disagree with anything Guardiola, not that he'll care about that, but I couldn't disagree with anything that he said at the end. They were exceptional, as they always are.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, they came off losers last night, and that's it. And the hard facts are, they're out.
Well, they are. I mean,
so we've missed out on an Arsenal Man City semi-final.
Well, that kind of is what it is.
And we've missed out on one of the two going to final.
Being in a UK final or a UK venue. Look, the point is that Manchester City were beaten by, and it is the results business. So at the bottom line is, you lost on a penalty shootout. Madrid had the fortitude to overcome all the adversity of taking penalties against a very hostile crowd. Might help if that hostile crowd handed the ball back to one of their players and made him wait 40 seconds to be able to take a penalty. Doesn't excuse a professional footballer chipping putting it into a goalkeeper's hands, but might not help. I think that's a good point, actually. I think you look at City and again, I make the point. I'm no vested interest in City. If you listen to half the City fans, they think I've got a vested agenda against them.
Have you?
But, no, I haven't. Right. But I look at the fact that they were, in my mind, they were a better side than Madrid over two legs. Somehow, some way, and a penalty shootout was a determiner. Madrid managed to find their way through.
Yeah.
But I look at City, but at no point in those two ties, despite the fact that possession-wise and quality of football-wise, I thought they were a better side, they never had control of the game. So you have to give that to Madrid, because Madrid hung in there for the entire game. Perhaps if De Bruyne, who, you know, lots of people have lots of impressions of, he's a very good player, sticks one in the back of the net when he should have done, we wouldn't be in extra time, or we wouldn't have been in a situation where Man City needed penalties. And the lottery of a penalty shootout, because it is a lottery.
Yeah. I mean, we always say what Premier League we've got, and we do.
We do.
What clubs we've got trying to win the Premier League, and we do. But they stumble. They stumbled last night. Just when the stakes were at the highest, they stumbled and went out.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't hold... the Champions League, which is made up of 90% of the team which aren't champions, in the same way that others do. I think, like the Brian Clough mentality, the most important thing is the domestic league. I realise that the stardust and the defining aspect is that you're playing amongst the elite of Europe, and so if you win that 13-game tournament, you're perceived to be the best.
It's the elite competition.
I understand that.
The elite competition.
I understand that, but it's not always won by the champions of their leagues, are they?
Doesn't matter. The elite are in there.
It's a knockout competition. It's a knockout competition.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, but it's a company you keep.
I'm not
Arsenal, Bayern Munich, Man City.
I'm not here to defend, because I debate with the principles of
but
the.
But people are coming for you. Simon, saying the Champions League's just a knockout cup.
It's a statement of fact.
If his beloved English teams had won last night, he'd be waxing lyrical about English teams dominating the Premier League.
Well, I don't have a beloved English team besides Crystal Palace, and they're not competing in the European Cup anytime soon, are they? So the point is that I look at it through the prism of, yes, you have to accept the facts that are in front of you. And we argue, and I argue against the fact, because we quite happily in this country turn around and say to everybody, which people get irritated on the continent, is we've got the best league in domestic football.
Yeah.
But I would argue that sometimes that's not right. We've got the most powerful and the most financially influential, and as a result of it, we've got some of the best players and some of the best coaches. I can debate sometimes about the quality of our football against the quality of the European football.
Yeah.
So I don't make that. It's not a little England mentality. I just look at this and say, you know, the European Cup for me doesn't define everything, but I understand why for others it does.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
You have news in the FA Cup, Mr. Crook, and changes being afoot. What are they?
Yeah, big changes. The FA have made an announcement in the last few minutes. You have to pick through a fair amount of corporate speak, I have to say, but the crux of it is this: the FA Cup replays have been scrapped from the first round proper onwards. No more FA Cup replays in the early rounds of the FA Cup. Of course, for several years now, they've been ditched from the fifth round onwards. I think this is a real blow for lower league football. I sort of understand why from the fifth round onwards, when it's mainly Premier League and Championship clubs, perhaps they don't want the extra fixture congestion. But you try telling a team in League Two, if they were to hold a Premier League side to a draw in 90 minutes, they don't get that money spinning replay away from home. I think it's going to be quite a bitter pill to swallow.
What do you think, Simon? Is it chipping away at the traditionalism? There's also going to be no FA Cup ties in midweek. They're all going to be weekends. That's it.
Well, you know, I think Alex is right, but maybe if a few more people kept their traps shut about how tired they are and how difficult it is for their schedules and how arduous their lives are, we wouldn't have it. But then again, we don't hear that from the EFL club. Shows you the balance of power. The FA doing their usual wonderful job of recognising their statesmanlike position in the position of managing football, hence the reason we've got an independent regulator coming in.
Do you think this is the beginning of the end for the FA Cup?
I certainly hope not. If the Premier League has its way, yeah, because the Premier League doesn't care about it very much. Premier League cares about the Premier League and all the revenue that goes in it. The Big Six care about the European competitions, how much money they can get out from that. And the FA Cup is a hindrance economically. It still has great luster. It still has great tradition. And you start to take away all the tradition in something, you're left with nothing.
The FA is going to get more money out of it, because the Premier League, as a result of this, is going to throw $33 million at it.
And that might be the trade-off that they
grassroots
think.
Grassroots football.
Yeah, they might. Well, what you mean is that the Premier League are going to meet their obligations they should be doing in the first place, which they haven't met previously. It clearly is a trade-off, and it may well be a trade-off that leads to other things. You might find that the movement of all of these different moving parts end up with a distribution deal that Rick Parry and Trevor Birch are happy with.
But they're chucking 100 million at grassroots football at the moment. Now they're topping that with 33 more.
Well, they should be paying 5% of the proceeds from the Premier League distribution deals into grassroots football. They haven't done it. They haven't done it over the years. So if they're topping up what they haven't done in the first place, then they should have been doing what they should have been doing. They should have been doing what they should have done in the first place.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
There's another podcast called The Sports Agent Podcast. And
Never heard of it.
Well, former Lionesses striker Eni Aluko has been speaking on that. Amongst other things, Eni claimed that men's football is not a safe place for women. Now, to our female listeners this morning, we want to hear from you. Before we hear from Eni Aluko, can you recognise in this what Eni is saying? Do you feel safe in stadiums in the men's game? Before I go any further, this was Eni Aluko on that topic on the Sports Agents podcast.
I say it all the time that men's football in this country is still not a safe space for women. Whether you're, you know, the wife of an average football fan that goes that loves football, or you're me who works in the professional broadcasting space, it's not a safe space. It's not a safe space physically going to a stadium, and it's not a safe space online. So when we look at the next generation of young girls now who are alive to football because of the Lionesses and who likely want to get into football, whether they play or whether they, you know, work behind the scenes or work in marketing, what would make them want to do that when there's daily casual racism, sexism, misogyny towards the women at the top?
That was Eni Aluko. It's not a safe space physically going to a stadium, and it's not a safe space online. And Eni, obviously, to say such things is speaking from experience. Simon, what's your take on that?
Look, I mean,
it's sad if it's true.
Well, it is, and safe spaces are all relevant to the individual and what they perceive to be a safe space. Anecdotally, if she's speaking about her experiences, then who am I to decry what she says? I don't think it's particular. I think it's divisive. If you look in recent weeks, we've just seen an instance in women's football where one of the male coaches probably doesn't think it's a particularly safe space, because he was involved in a situation where he was basically told that it was because he was a male that his behaviour was unacceptable.
Well, so I don't think this is Emma Hayes incident.
Yeah, correct.
Oh,
yeah.
Simon.
Well, that's, well, hold on. If we're going to qualify things in a certain way,
is that comparison?
Well, why isn't it? I mean, I have to say I don't take a lot of credibility behind what and he says, because whilst their experiences are relevant, what happens in the online world has got really little to do with men's football. It's to do with the way that, as you've seen my article written about, in a society that we live in, there's lots of challenges. I think if you say stupid things, and she's very prone to doing that, that people are going to be condemnatory of it, whether you're a man or a female.
But I wouldn't put it by many football fans to say stupid things to women attending football matches.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's not necessarily men's football. That's society and some of the behaviour of society. So what we're saying is, the argument is, men's football is not a safe place for women. And I'd be interesting, because ultimately women are not a homogenous group. They all have their own views, and they all have their own experiences, and they all have their own vantage points. And I think this very easy way of just throwing around observations, if you don't like somebody and they happen to be a woman and you don't like their views, then they can throw around the fact that you're being casually misogynistic. If you don't like somebody and they happen to be black, it's got nothing to do with their colour that you don't like them. It happens to be casual racism. And I don't like these tropes being trotted out without some proper scrutiny and some proper analysis of what any would define as a safe space, because she does. She's got a battle going on with Joey Barton about some of the things that he said about her, and I do think that some of the things that he says about people are a little bit too extreme. And he will find the consequences of that, perhaps in his case with Jeremy Vine. But the point is that I don't see what is the purpose of what she's suggesting. I don't recognise football as being a place that excludes people. There are always going to be a section of society, whether they are male or female, that aren't particularly the kind of people that are the best representation of it. But if you look at football en masse, and you look at the employment of people within the confines of football, whether it's footballers or people in the boardroom, I think most of the time it's based upon meritocracy. Some other people would have you believe it's about something else because they're particularly pursuing an agenda. And I think that sometimes Annie is in that camp where she doesn't like the criticism that comes from some of the things. She came on this show a while ago, and I have to say, talked utter nonsense about the idea in football that technical directors would speak to one another about the transfer of a £100 million player to induce bids that they had no interest of being involved in. Now, I could be then accused of, because I think it's utter nonsense, of being casually misogynistic, but I wasn't. And if it had been a man that said it, I would have said utter nonsense.
Well, let's put it out there, because we're getting calls, and I'm glad about that. 03717 223 344. We want to hear from female fans who go to football matches. Do you relate with what Annie is saying here? Men's football in this country is still not a safe place for women. Samantha, I think, is an Aston Villa fan. Samantha, good morning. What would you like to say?
Hi, just that I feel 100% safe all of the time. I've never had a problem, ever. I've been going to Villa Park for 16 years. Before that, I used to go to Leighton Orient. I've always felt safe. I've always felt secure. I've always felt, even if I'm on my own, that well-respected. And, yeah, I don't understand that whatsoever.
Are you surprised by any of Luca's observations here, Samantha?
I am, because I think that women do love men's football and they should always feel that they feel safe. I mean, I worry that people don't feel safe, but I'm only speaking from personal experience, so that's all I have, really.
Of course, Samantha, and you're right to call us and right to tell us that. Thank you so much. Samantha's an Aston Villa fan. What do you make of what Ennio Luca is saying? There's another call, no name in it, another message. Sick of this. I'm a woman. I've no problem going to a football match. I can take care of myself. I'm resilient and I'm strong. People are looking to be offended by everything these days. I agree 100% with Simon Jordan. What do you want to say to this? Ennio Luca seemingly is not making this up. I say it all the time, says Ennio. Men's football in this country is still not a safe place for women. Whether you're the wife of an average football fan who loves football, or you're me, who works in professional broadcasting, it's not a safe space. Putting it out there to female fans all around the country, do you relate to what Annie is saying?
Depends what you... I mean, it's such an observation that has such broad understandings, interpretations of it. What is safe? We use this safe space interpretation now. We have this argument running in the women's community about transgender rights and people having safe spaces to be able to go into dressing rooms, or sports needs to be a safe space where they can compete against equals rather than a biological male competing in women's sports. And I understand all that. Safe space, does it mean, because I think what it means to Annie Luku is that it means that you're not allowed to be criticised. I think male pundits, where the space that she operates on, get just as much criticism as female do. And if you say stupid things, you shouldn't be devoid of criticism.
OK, give us a call on that. Not a safe space for women. Sharon's a big Tottenham fan. Sharon, good morning. Do you identify with what Annie is saying here?
Morning. No, not at all. First of all, yeah, good morning. And
good morning.
I'd just like to say hello to Simon, because I'm a massive fan of his.
I agree
with so much he says. Yeah, getting back, I totally disagree. I'm a season ticket holder of 20 years, plus 20 years. I've been going since I was 10. I'm now 55. And I feel totally safe at going to Spurs. I travel on my own. I walk through the park on my own and meet my friends there. You know, I have a fantastic, well, sometimes have a fantastic time, depending on the score. But I love it. You know, it's my life. And I don't agree. I know that a lot of my friends that go football, they feel safe. And I just don't think that represents most of the female population. I don't.
Oh, Sharon, thanks for the call. We're pleased to hear that. Carol, you're a big West Ham fan, obviously hoping West Ham can do something tonight against Bayer Leverkusen, but that's another matter. What about the words of Ennio Luco? Can you relate to them?
No, not really. I mean, with regards to going to West Ham, I'm a massive West Ham fan, and I've been to a European game on a Thursday night completely on my own, turned up there, had an amazing time, seen Anautovic score a goal. He's bursting into tears on his all fours. I'm bursting into tears. I'm worried that I'm going to look like a numpty because I'm crying my eyes out. Then I look around, every single man around me is also crying their eyes out. The only thing that I worry about when I go to West Ham on my own on a Thursday night football is when I get off the train and I've got to get the train to get home. That's the only scary bit. I've got 60,000 people who are West Ham fans around me. If I'm in trouble, somebody's going to look after me. Absolutely.
The only bit I can, good to hear.
Yeah, the only bit I identify with what the lady said on her bit is the online bit. Yeah, I mean, but let's face it, everybody gets abuse online. It's not about women in football. It's just basically keyboard warriors thinking that they can say what they like behind a keyboard. But actually, at football, going to West Ham, it's like going home, and I'm completely safe, and I go on my own as many times as I possibly can.
That's great to hear, Carol. Thank you so much for your time and your call. Vicky, Manchester United fan. Vicky, do you go with the previous two callers, or do you identify with what Annie is saying?
I completely agree with the previous two callers. Love the rowdiness of football. I'm from Luton, so I've been to Kenilworth Road, been to Old Trafford with my nephew and my young son when they were young. I was in at the Arsenal-Luton game in the Arsenal end only a couple of weeks ago. Didn't feel anything being stirred amongst the Arsenal fans, even though I was there to watch Luton. I just think what she said is utter nonsense. I love the rowdiness of a pub on an England game. It's a man's game still, but women have always been involved in it. I just think it's utter nonsense what she said. Online isn't real life. Online isn't real life. If you don't like online, come offline.
Online isn't real life, Vicky, as you rightly say. But she says it's not a safe space physically going to a stadium. You've never, ever experienced that.
Never, ever. I love nothing more than hearing the chants and hearing the rowdiness, seeing all the kids chanting when the goal's scored. Everyone turns around and hugs each other. And like Kenilworth Road, one of the rowdiest places you could ever go. And the atmosphere, it's what football's all about. Never, ever, ever have I ever felt being a female intimidated at any of their occasions. Not being in a pub when England are on or a big final. Never, ever. Never, ever. Utter nonsense, what she said. Absolute rubbish.
Vicky, thank you very much indeed. Simon, I mean, that was a very small straw poll. Yeah. I mean, when we do an item like this in the show, as you might imagine, there are many, many calls. I'm looking at the theme of most of the callers, and they are all the same, saying they can't identify with what Ennio Luco is saying.
Well,
and the many messages coming in. They're coming in all the time.
They refute the idea that physically, as Annie has alluded to, that there is a feeling of a lack of safe space. You can't discredit what Annie Aluka has said because it's her experience and it's what she believes, right?
Yeah.
But what you have to then do is push back at the validity of what she's doing because she's speaking on behalf of others.
Sure.
And if she's moving herself into the online space where people are critical of her opinions, then that's a very different dynamic, and people are not immune from criticism.
There's a final message. My wife and her auntie travel all over Europe to watch Rangers. My 14-year-old daughter goes to Ibrox with her aunt, and they have never encountered any danger whatsoever, says Paul the Hibs fan.
Danger. Flammable exchanges ahead. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
I'm not exaggerating here, but somebody, an avid listener to our show yesterday, told me face to face, this is a highlight of the week for them. When they hear that theme tune, the Spencer Oliver walk-on music, and the man himself walks on with it, and Spencer Oliver has arrived in studio. I'm not joking. That was said to me yesterday, and here he is.
Listen, Jim, it's the highlight of my week as well.
Well, I'm not surprised at that. And
Simon, why are you looking at me like
I'm
that?
I'm looking at you, you nauseating little toad, because you're wearing a roll neck, and you know that's my shtick now.
Yeah, but if you remember rightly, you actually saw me with the podcast that we do, the Talk Boxing podcast. I actually wore the roll neck first, and I started recognising that you started wearing them more and more, and you wore them so often that I had to stop wearing them.
Not true.
Yes, that's
and
true.
Yesterday, when I come in the studio yesterday, Simon had a shirt on, so I thought perhaps he's over it. I'm going to stick my roll neck back on.
No, I can exclusively reveal, I saw Spencer coming out a very smart store in Sloane Street with that roll neck. Great to see you on board, mate. Thank you so much. Spencer, a lot to get through. Yet again, the big talking point now, Saudi Arabia. And the big talking point now, as well as Bivol against Beta Biev, is going to be the lineup of fighters from Matchroom against the lineup of fighters from Queensbury. In other words, Eddie Hearn's lineup will take on Frank Warren's lineup in Saudi Arabia. That is on the 1st of June on the undercard of Bivol Beta Biev. They announced this in a kind of movie style type trailer fashion. Here's a snip of it.
Picture this. You got yourself into one of the most dangerous man's houses in the East End. You're browsing his gallery for your nan's next wall piece.
Looked after his nan. Oh.
When you come face to face with a colourful character himself and his lovely sawn-off shotgun, you slip the first shot, leaving with a shiner to remember you by. That's another one for his nan's collection.
They say if you love what you do, you'll never have to work another day in your life. He's never had a CV. Just a fist. So he got a job as a doorman. And like the saying goes, if you can't take the heat, then why are you even in the kitchen?
I mean, Hearn and
Guy Ritchie directed that.
Sound as if they're in a Guy Ritchie movie, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not quite sure where it's gone, but they're spending a few quid
It's a sizzler. That's what it should do. It gets people at it and on it. Did they also do the reveal where they pulled off the masks of the fighters?
They did, yeah.
Wouldn't the sort of pipe cleaner legs that Deontay Wilder had been a giveaway as though it was in the first place?
Well, yeah, he didn't really see him. Like, you only saw them briefly walk on. But yeah, I think we all sort of worked out who it was when they sat down. You could pretty much tell. But listen, it was all part of the build-up. It was all part of the sale. And it was good. And that trailer they put together was absolutely fantastic. It was like watching Lockstock.
Yeah, so amongst other things, in the lead-up to Bivol Beta Biev, we have Deontay Wilder fighting Zhang, Hergovic fighting Daniel Dubois, Nick Ball, who impressed you, Simon, will fight Ray Ford, and the list goes on. I mean, what is it telling us, again, other than we'll hear another bunch of decent fights, but in Saudi?
Yeah, well, look, if you look at it, look, what we're getting is, as boxing fans, you've got the undisputed title fight, which is a fantastic fight anyway, Dmitry Bivol, Artur Beterbiev. But the undercard, we normally get, like, you might get a chief support that's half decent, and then the end of it is just the rest of the kids sort of, like, building up their careers, really. But with this one, you've got, like, the undercard there with the five fights on the undercard, they're all top of the bills. They're all 50-50 fights. It's great to see, like, so I understand, yeah, it's out in Saudi Arabia. Well, that's fine because, you know, on the flip side, we're getting the fights that now we want to see. And you can't knock that. As a boxing fan, you just got to go, well, look, you know, Turki Al-Sheikh and the investment of Saudi Arabia, they're getting the fights that the boxing fans have been craving for a long, long time, which is great.
But what does that tell us? Does that show the brilliance of Saudi or just the patheticness of what was offered before?
No, I think it's just the finances that they're injecting. It wasn't financially achievable if you couldn't put a card like that on over here and do a pay-per-view model and give the fighters the money that they are receiving to put a bill on like that. So it wasn't financially achievable.
Saudi money
has made a difference, and I think that is good for the boxing fans. You can't deny that. Like, you know, we got two undisputed title fights in the space of 2 weeks, I think it is, with obviously Fury and Alexander Usyk as well. So that's fantastic.
Fury and Usyk May the 18th, Better Be of and Bivol, and this lot June the first. Sammy, what do you look at when you look down the list? Wilder Zhang, Hergovic Dubois, Ford Ball, Richards, Hutchinson, Williams, Shiraz. Does it float your boat? Are you interested to see the outcomes?
They're definitely good fights. I mean, if we follow on from the bankability of Deontay Wilder and move past the discussions that myself and Spencer have had, that Deontay Wilder has left the building. There's not much left of Deontay Wilder, the fighter, because of the performance we saw against Joseph Parker. That diminishes what Parker achieved, but notwithstanding it, it's a perception that Spencer and I have. So he's bankable rather than credible, right? But then you look at the other fights. Hergovic is going to challenge for the world title somewhere along the line. So this is an eliminator. Daniel Dubois has done well to get himself back into contention. Mm-hmm. Ray Ford versus Nick Ball. Well, Nick Ball was robbed against Ray Fargus, and he's getting another world title shot, so away you go. Craig Richards, we know what Craig Richards is capable of. We've seen him fight Josh Boatse. We've seen him fight Dimitri Bivol. He's a top light heavyweight, and it's a great fight.
Yeah.
And Hamza Shiraz is the next potential star. I don't like what he did to Bradley Skeet, but that's just my own personal agenda. But these are all really good fights, and the headline fight is a remarkable fight for the undisputed light heavyweight championship of the world. It'd probably be better than the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world, because you've got two guys that are really, really equal in terms of what they're capable of achieving. They've both got 20 unbeatens. Phenomenal fight.
Let's do a tester then to see if you're both singing from the same hymn sheet when it comes to outcomes. Wilder Zhang, in a word, Spencer, who wins it?
Zhang.
Simon?
Who cares?
That was two. Hergovic, Daniel Dubois, who wins it?
Oh, it's a tough fight.
Dubois.
Ray Ford, Nick Ball.
Nick Ball.
Craig Richards, Willie Hutchinson.
Craig Richards.
Amal Williams, Hamza Shiraz.
Shiraz.
Okay. So
it's the first time we've ever agreed on everything.
Yeah. How does this then... Does anyone know what the pathway likely is now? I mean, thereafter, what does this lead to, Spencer? Does it lead to Wilder Joshua? I mean, how and why would that ever happen?
Right, so... I'll tell you where the roadmap is for me and the way that I see this. We've got Deontay Wilder, obviously, against Yele Zhang. He's looking to try and regain some credibility, and he'll get that if he beats Yele Zhang. They're both coming off losses to Joseph Parker, but the winner will put his name right back in the mix. We've got this undisputed fight going on, so Tyson Fury's tied up there. We've got Filip Hergovic boxing Daniel Dubois. I believe that'll be for the vacant IBF title. The winner of that, I believe, will go on and box Anthony Joshua, September, Wembley Stadium, with another 5v5 underneath that. And then let's say we do get Daniel Dubois versus Anthony Joshua, IBF title, Wembley Stadium. Now the fans are getting what they want again. The British fans are getting what they want, you know, and we're getting this fight, and we'll have another 5v5 on the undercard of that. And then I believe, this is how I reckon it will go, by that time, I think Fury Usyk would have had their two fight deal that they were doing, and I reckon you get the winner of Anthony Joshua versus, let's say, Daniel Dubois, if he comes through, please God, and we get Anthony Joshua, Daniel Dubois, vacant IBF title. I think then you get the winner of that fighting the winner of Fury Usyk, and the outcome of those two. That's the roadmap that I see.
Spencer, very nicely described. If that happens, Simon, at least we're going to see some fights here.
Oh, I always thought we were. I mean, ultimately, we're talking about the top of the cream First of all, a lot of these are not British fighters fighting against other British fighters. So whenever we've seen top fights, we've seen them in Vegas. We've seen them in Madison Square Garden. So they've always happened over there. So this crying about the fact that we don't see it in the UK is probably misplaced because people have got a potential agenda against the Saudis. Now, whilst I'm not a lickspittle and I'm not a sycophant and I'm not going to bury my head up their backsides because I'm getting paid from them, you've got to call it for what it is. It is a scenario which is, they're not doing it for the love of the sport, despite the protestations. They're doing it because it's an opportunity to what I believe they've always wanted to do, which is use sport to image launder, create an outcome. And they can get upset if they want, and they can call that xenophobia if they want. It isn't. It's an opinion.
Sure. Right?
And so, but the boxing fans, if you're a boxing fan looking at putting aside all the politics of whether this is good for the ecosystem of sport, whether when the Saudis may lose interest, that the financial landscape has changed, that people don't want to fight in this country anymore because the money isn't big enough. Put aside all that for the time being and look at the fights and go, as a boxing fan, these are top draw fights.
Absolutely.
You've got Fury and you've got Usyk. And the one thing they can't do anymore is they can't run and hide any of these fighters about money because the money's off the table now. So fights get made.
But Spencer, do you need promoters anymore?
Well, of course you do,
Why? So do money, that takes care of everything.
Listen, but the promoters, look, they're still, it's not just happening out in Saudi Arabia. We're still going to get the big fights over here. The fights are still going to happen over here as well. I think that
they're not the biggest fights happening over here.
Not right now. Well, we're going to get Anthony Joshua versus whoever. That's what I'm feeling in September. I know we're going to get a huge show with the biggest fights on the undercard. Something similar to what we're getting out in Saudi Arabia. So it will be happening.
You'll never get Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury here.
No.
Well, yeah.
No.
And that's the fight. If Anthony Joshua does his business and ends up with another belt before he gets to fight Tyson Fury, and Tyson Fury does his and gets rid of the cruiserweight that he constantly derides for his size, then the big fight will be the fight that everyone's wanted for years, right, apparently, which is Joshua versus Fury.
Yeah.
That won't happen in this country because they won't be able to make it economically.
At least things are moving again. 1 month today, Usyk Fury. One thing we now know is that this fight's a bit different because it's come as the Pope has signed and blessed the title belt that Fury and Usyk will fight for.
Absolutely. I held that belt and I've seen it. Yeah, Pope Francis has signed both ends of the belt as well, actually.
What did he sign on it?
I think it looks absolutely fantastic.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. We're not talking nonsense here. The WEC president, Maurizio Sulaiman, took the belt to the Pope, who blessed the belt and signed it.
The world's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.